Hi there, it's Ed here with a short message before we start the pod this week. Did you know that our most informed investors get insights, articles, and investment ideas from Tom, me, and the team sent directly to them via email, and it is completely free. You can join them. Just subscribe at fidelity.co.uk/newsletters. Hello and welcome to the Personal Investor Podcast. I'm Ed Monk. Today on the show, where can investors look as markets get ever more concentrated? The dominance of the US stock market and a small group of companies within that market means plenty are wondering how to hedge their bets at the moment. Fascinating new analysis offers some answers, and that is our focus today. If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. Lots of investors right now are looking at the market's near record level, and in particular the level of the companies that have driven those highs, and are concluding that something has to give. Seldom have returns been concentrated in such a small area of the market, with the results that investors are increasingly dependent on just a few companies. Against that backdrop, many are looking for smart alternatives to the giant names, the Magnificent Seven chief among them, which have dominated for so long. Does new analysis hold the key to those alternatives? To help answer that, I'm joined by Tom Stevenson, Investment Director here at Fidelity. Tom, welcome along. Why don't we start with an explanation of what this new analysis is and what it's saying, and why this in general is on the minds of investors.
Yeah, so this analysis is came across our desks this week. It's a note actually from Goldman Sachs, and it's basically looking at the increasing concentration of financial markets at the moment, and it basically breaks it down into three areas. So they talk about the market concentration, essentially the growing dominance of the US market within global markets. It talks about sector concentration, and in particular, of course, that's most notably obvious within the technology sector. And then finally, they talk about stock concentration. That, of course, refers to the Magnificent Seven, which you mentioned before in the US, but there's also stock concentration in a number of markets, particularly in Europe, where there's a small group of companies which, just like the Magnificent Seven, dominate the European markets, both in terms of size, but also in terms of performance, and similar effects actually in markets like Japan as well.
Yeah, and look, we've covered some of this ground before on the podcast, certainly as concerns the Magnificent Seven, but I don't make any apology for doing it again. It is really a very important question, isn't it, for investors right now? Because, as I said in my introduction, the perception is growing that something's going to change or going to have to change in terms of where the markets get their returns from, because so much of it has been driven by this small group of companies, by the US in general, you could say, but tech within that, and within that, the Magnificent Seven. Now, that doesn't have to be a big moment of these companies collapsing. In fact, the Goldman Sachs work is very interesting, actually. I would urge people to seek it out, because it gives a very sort of thorough explanation of that whole issue. But there may not be a big blow up of this, but it could be. Returns could change, couldn't they, from here? We might get a different profile of returns, and it might not be those companies driving them.
Yeah, absolutely. It is likely to change over time. And why does it matter? Well, it matters a lot because of that concentration, because performance has been driven by relatively small areas of the whole. If you're not exposed to those areas, whether that's, you know, exposed to the US as a market, whether it's exposed to technology as a sector, whether it's exposed to those specific companies, the Magnificent Seven or the granolas within Europe, then it's very difficult actually to keep up with the market, to perform. So asset allocation is always important, but it's particularly important when the market is driven by such a narrow leadership.
Yeah, now it sliced it in a number of ways. You've gone over those, and it looked first at this from the point of view of the US versus the rest of the world. What did it conclude in terms of the US's dominance and how risky that might be?
Well, I mean, what it concluded was that, well, first of all, it stated the fact that the US has become more dominant in recent years. And indeed, the US's share of the global markets has been rising steadily since the financial crisis. And indeed, it's probably actually been accelerating in recent years. And we have seen that. We've seen this sort of divergence of performance between the US market and other markets. And sort of as a consequence of that, it has become more dominant. But even within the American economy, the stock market has become more significant. So the relationship between the size of the stock market and the size of the American economy has increased. So a number of questions there. You know, to what extent is that justified by what's going on? Is it justified by the performance of companies, by their earning capability? And I think that one of the conclusions that Goldman comes to is that actually, to an extent, it is justified by what's going on the ground. That, you know, US companies have a great ability to reinvest their profits and to grow as a consequence of that. It's a very liquid market. It's a very strong economy. It's growing very, very fast. And so to an extent, they think that the higher valuations in the US market are actually justified.
Yeah, I was really interested in the chart in this work that showed the size of different countries' stock market versus their GDP. And there's a couple that are higher on that measure than the US. I think Switzerland and Denmark. Denmark's got one very, very large shipping company or something, isn't it? Which I can't remember the name of.
Yeah, it's a healthcare company. Novo Nordisk, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. Switzerland. I can imagine why that might be the case for Switzerland.
Yeah.
But it made the point that, look, yeah, as you say, it's not just about the economic performance and a strong kind of thrusting economy in the US. It's also about lots of other companies either wanting to list there for whatever reason or just get general sort of expand their operations in and their investments in the US as well, because they obviously see the attraction of this. And it speaks of this story of basically the advantages of the US economy becoming self-fulfilling after a certain point. They are big because they are successful, and they are successful because they are big. And round it goes, and that effect adds up.
Yeah, and we've noticed this in particular with regard to the UK stock market. There's been a lot of anxiety about the health of the UK stock market. A lot of companies choosing not to list in the UK, but to list in the US. So Arm is the most notable example recently. And these are big, successful businesses, and they're choosing to both operate, but also to list their shares in the US. So to an extent, it does become self-fulfilling, and it is a kind of winner-takes-all environment. And it just means that the US is becoming increasingly difficult to compete with on lots of different levels.
It makes the point, doesn't it, that it's quite hard for some professional investors, some active managers, to actually match that performance of the US, because they're having to put so much money into the biggest companies. There, we've gone over the ways of describing the size of the Magnificent Seven. We don't need to do it again. They're big. If you buy the US market, you're getting lots of them, basically. And it says it's making things difficult in terms of investing there, and it comes up with some potential alternative regions of the world. What does it have to say there in terms of where else you might invest?
Yes, I mean, it looks for ways in which you might diversify your portfolio. The way Goldman frames this is, I think, quite interesting. It looks at Japan. It describes Japan as a restructuring opportunity. It looks at India as a growth opportunity. It looks at China as a value opportunity. It doesn't actually mention the UK, but I would suggest that the UK probably falls into that value opportunity as well. So I think what it's saying is that diversification is still a good thing, and that you can get different factors by investing in different parts of the world. So I think the Japanese story is an interesting one. I mean, it is a big market. But the story there is not really, they don't have the same attractions as the US market. It's not a big, I mean, there are technology companies, but it's not the same as the US market. But it does have something which maybe the US doesn't have. It has this catalyst for change. So I think that what it's saying is that, you know, you want to look at different opportunities in different parts of the world, and that they are qualitatively different in different countries.
Yes, and in terms of those, you know, diversification is you want markets behaving in different ways. It makes the point with Japan that you do have that effect. It's not particularly correlated with the US. The only other markets that are sort of less correlated are real emerging markets. I mean, and India among them chiefly. The analysis also looked at the issue from a sector point of view, didn't it? Now, what it's talking about, I guess, is sectors other than tech. What did it have to say there, and what about sort of regional alternatives to the Magnificent Seven?
Yeah, I mean, again, this is a diversification question, because you know, yes, technology is the dominant sector in the US market. As a consequence, it is highly valued, and I think that one of the ways in which Goldman is encouraging us to think about the market is to see that there are other high growth sectors. It mentions healthcare as an opportunity, which can offer investors the growth, but it can do it at a significantly cheaper valuation than technology. So so that's in terms of sector, and in terms of stocks, you know, it does Goldman actually came up with this notion of the granolas, which is a long list of it's a list of 11.
Name them, Tom.
Yeah, well, I'll name some of them. I mean, there was some healthcare companies, GSK and Roche. Some technology companies, ASML, healthcare. We mentioned healthcare, Nestle. Well, that's a consumer products company. So it's a wide range of companies. And I think that's the point about that is that the European stock market is different from the US stock market. It is actually a more varied stock market than the US stock market.
Yeah.
These companies are dominant in their own areas, but there are lots of different areas.
Yeah.
But they have some similarities with the tech stocks in that they are all companies which have this ability to reinvest their profits. They have this ability to compound their earnings over time steadily. They're very big, reliable companies. So in that regard, they look very similar to the Apples and the Amazons and the Microsofts, but they do it in different sectors, and they crucially, they do it at a cheaper valuation than the tech stocks.
Indeed. Well, first thing to say about the granolas is that is a bad acronym, isn't it? Because it doesn't even, the names of these companies don't even spell granolas. GSK, Roche, ASML, Nestle, Novartis, Novo Nordisk, L'Oreal, LVMH, AstraZeneca, SAP, and Sanofi. So yeah, across different sectors, healthcare,
consumer
luxury staples, goods, yeah. Luxury goods. So it's really reminding investors that there is life outside of tech, isn't it? I mean, you kind of can forget this a little bit. These companies are there on relatively high valuations because they've done well. They have those growth characteristics that mean they've spent a decade or so being very, very attractive for investors, but they're just not as stretched as the tech companies. I mean, the people will be listening to this in the context of the end of the tax year, really good opportunity and a good time to be looking at investments. I feel there could be some people looking at these kind of companies for the first time because, well, I'll speak for myself, you know, when you can see the valuations on tech being so, on US tech being so stretched, you know, this feels a bit less high octane, doesn't it? And reassuring, perhaps, you know, established industries, established companies.
Mm. Yeah, and this is not a new investment approach. I mean, you know, for many years, you know, a key focus in our market has been the success of Terry Smith, for example. Mm. Nick Train as well, another, you know, these are both, you know, both investors, and there are others who invest specifically in this type of, it's what Goldman calls, I think they call them ETCs, X tech compounders.
Yeah.
So these are non-technology companies that have the capability, they have strong brands, they have strong moats around their business, to use that Warren Buffett phrase. They have the ability to compound their earnings growth over many years. And I think you're right, that I think that as markets become seemingly frothier, after the strong rises that we've seen, I think many investors, ourselves included, are probably looking at ways in which we can diversify away the risk of investing just in those very successful technology stocks, which have produced fantastic returns. But I think there is a question mark over how long that can go on. And if we can pass the baton on to another group of maybe cheaper but equally attractive companies, that starts to look interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, for someone, I'm going to finish with a question around the circumstances in which that kind of bet pays off. But if you were convinced that now was the time to pivot away slightly from the US and from tech, maybe Japan on a restructuring basis, maybe India on a growth basis, maybe China on a value basis, maybe even the UK on a value basis, maybe the sort of leadership in Europe as a sort of alternative growth story. But what needs to happen for that to actually pay off, Tom? Because of all the other things the Goldman analysis does, it does really underline exactly how dominant US tech is, and why it's dominant, and why that could in fact continue. You're going to have to be brave, aren't you, to bet against that, because I can't see an immediate reason why the rest of the world catches up all those advantages that the US has in terms of a stock market. I don't see why US tech suddenly gives up the advantages that it has. In fact, the Goldman Sachs work, it sort of highlights that in the last couple of years, we had this moment, didn't we, when inflation rose very quickly, rates rose. That was a structural challenge to US tech. But they cut costs, you know, they focused on making themselves more profitable again, and they seem to have come through it even stronger. So I think why does
point,
that change?
I think the point you make is a good one about pivoting sort of at the margin slightly. I don't think you do have to be brave. I don't think it's an either or situation. I don't think it's I'm all in on tech, US tech, or I completely cut my holdings in US tech and I go elsewhere. I think it's a case of balancing your portfolio and recognizing that, there are opportunities all around the world in all sorts of different sectors and different groups of companies. And actually, it's just a case of shifting the balance slightly. Because these tech stocks, they may not continue to perform as strongly as they have. That doesn't mean that they're going to become bad investments.
Yeah.
They might just settle at a lower compounded rate of growth going forward. But you know, it might still be basically an attractive investment, but you might get the oomph in your portfolio from somewhere else.
Yeah.
So I think we bore ourselves rigid talking about diversification, but how important it is.
Yeah. And just finally then, they describe these companies and how they've performed, and like we say, it's not to do with them suddenly disappearing overnight or not being around anymore. They're likely to be very long-lived companies, all of these big tech companies, but they may change. But they might change from an investment point of view. They could be still in good investments. They could be very defensive. They might start paying big dividends as well. That changes the appeal from an investment point of view. But they may not be the high growth prospects that they have been. That is a reasonable conclusion to make. Mm-hmm. And so look for your growth elsewhere.
Yeah, and look forward 20 years, say, and I'm quite sure that the makeup of the S&P 500 or the Euro Stoxx 600 or whatever index you're looking at will look very different from how it looks now. Mm. But I'm sure that a lot of these core companies that are leaders now will still be core companies in 10, 20 years' time.
Okay. Well, Tom, we've covered loads there, and that is all the time we have for now. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Ed.
You've been listening to the Money Talk podcast. Check fidelity.co.uk for daily written updates and articles on these and other topics from across Fidelity in the UK. And subscribe via iTunes to get the podcast downloaded direct to your devices every week.
Please note that the value of investments and the income from them can go down as well as up, so you may get back less than you invest. Investors should note that the views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon. This information is not a personal recommendation for any particular investment. If you are unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to one of Fidelity's advisors or an authorised financial advisor of your choice. Overseas investments will be affected by movements in currency exchange rates, and investments in emerging markets can be more volatile than other more developed markets. Reference to the specific securities should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities and is included for the purposes of illustration only. Tax treatment depends on individual circumstances and all tax rules may change in the future. Withdrawals from a pension product may not be possible until you reach age 55, 57 from 2028. This podcast may not be reproduced or circulated without prior permission. No statements or representations made in this podcast are legally binding on Fidelity or the recipient. This podcast is meant only for UK residents and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation in any jurisdiction in which it may be unlawful to make such an offer or solicitation.